Blog Talk Radio.
I tell you what, it might have been the Illuminati. I blame the Unk. I'm here with Brandon Connor, my co-host, and Mac Trammell, senior writer for GrizzlyBearBlues.com. We're back on again. Unk comes on and drops this Illuminati stuff, and then here we are having to restart the podcast. Brandon, are you there?
I'm here. It's unreal how that happened. It's
Mac, are you here?
I am. Can y'all hear me?
Yes, we can hear you, Mac. I swear. Dang it, Unk.
That was wild.
Unk literally might have Illuminati'd us. He might legitimately have powers, and I am terrified.
I'm questioning how powerful, like, where does he rank within the society?
He's got to be up there, apparently. If he's turning the show on to us, onto the Illuminati, and then the Illuminati shuts the show down, he must be pretty high up there, I would think.
It also begs the question, what are we doing? What are we doing wrong to get our show shut down by the Illuminati? Or what are we doing right?
I don't know. I'm really scared. I got to tell you, that was pretty crazy. In all seriousness, Blog Talk Radio sometimes is not the best. So I'm leaning towards that being it. It's just funny how the timing of that worked out. So here we are, part two of Grizzly Bear Blues Live. I'm Joe Mullinax, at Joe Mullinax. Brandon Connors, my co-host, at Ball from Grace. We're joined by one of our senior writers over at GrizzlyBearBlues.com, Mac Trammell. He does a tremendous job for us over there. He did amazing work as the season ended, covering some games for us over at GrizzlyBearBlues.com, and he also was at the end of season availability. Mac, let's talk about that with the Memphis Grizzlies. What was it like being there in that room, seeing all those players? What was the body language like? What was just your overall take? You have a great article up at the site right now that kind of details some of your main takeaways, but what was the vibe of the room? What was the feel as the Grizzlies went fishing for the summer?
You know, if I could use one word, I mean, now that I'm on the spot, I would have to think about it a little bit more if I wanted to use maybe a better word. But the one I'm thinking of right now is kind of relief. It just seemed like players were glad that this season was over. Not necessarily that they were, you know, not happy to be with each other or that they had bad chemistry or anything, but they just this kind of nightmarish, just amalgamation of a bunch of bad things has ended. And, you know, I think especially Marc Gasol seemed really happy, really light. I know I'd only been to, I don't know, I guess 3 or 4 games that I covered for Mark King. But in those games, he was mostly, you know, calculated, it seemed like. And today he seemed like he was a little bit more liberated, if that makes sense. And, you know, the fact that's Marc Gasol, the leader of the team, you know, that suggests to me that, you know, it was sort of an infectious sort of feeling. And that's kind of the feeling I got from a lot of players, not every player, but a lot of guys, at least.
It really is kind of a situation where you felt for the guy, you know, and I've been one of the loudest critics of Mark in the past. No disputing that, whether it be his leadership style, his brush ups with Fizdale dating back over a year and a half ago. You know, I've been hard on Mark, partially because he's one of my favorite players to ever watch, and I just want more for him and for him to kind of realize his potential. I truly believe this was his greatest season. Obviously, you could argue playing-wise, the defensive player of the year season, the season he started in the All-Star game. In terms of playing and the skill of the game, maybe those were better years. But the way that he led this team, the way that he helped these young players, I think you can make a real argument that Dylan Brooks is not the Dylan Brooks that we have today without Marc Gasol. So I was just kind of curious. You talked a good bit, or you were a part of that conversation with Mark a good bit earlier. You mentioned his feelings of liberation, and you also mentioned in your article that you think Mark's going to be around. You don't think he's going to ask for a trade. Why do you feel that way? And do you agree that this was one of Marc Gasol's greatest seasons as a Memphis Grizzly, even though they went 22-60?
I'll answer your second question first. So I see where you're coming from. And I think that, you know, at his age, what is he, about 30, maybe 31, if I'm not mistaken, he put up really good numbers. Again, this is also coming off of a foot injury that everyone kind of thought and has historically been really has ravaged players who have had it. I guess that was two seasons ago. But the fact that he was able to come back and still put up all-star-ish numbers is really great. And the fact that he didn't have Mike Conley, Zach Randolph, Tony Allen this year, had to basically get used to a semi-new group of people to play with, and still put up a lot of good numbers. On obviously he had a greater usage because of Mike's injury. So for all of those reasons, yes, I totally see where you're coming from. I don't know. I would want to go ahead and look at the numbers from past seasons before I pass judgment on if this was his greatest season or not. But I totally hear you, and I think that's a valid argument. And as to your first question about whether Gasol is going to stay or not, you know, I think it's still technically up in the air, but the way – so Jeff Calkins at the Commercial Appeal asked him pretty directly, do you have any interest in leaving Memphis, or do you want to be here for the rebuilding of – do you want to be here to build something again? And Mark was pretty enthusiastic, I thought, at the idea of coming back and being the leader, being the guy who stuck around and was there for that one terrible season, but was able to bring them back. He mentioned that, you know, no matter what happens, if he were to leave or to stay, he is a Memphis guy through and through. He's lived here since he was 16, 15 years old, and has basically never left, except for obviously that brief stint in Barcelona. And that Memphis is just a part of him. And when he said that, that was the moment that I was like, okay, I think this guy really wants to stay despite the really horrible season.
So you kind of touched on that Mark wants to be here and wants to be the one to bring him back. And we've over this season, they had a chance to blow it up. The front office had the opportunity when things went poorly. They could have seen that and, you know, said it's time to turn the page, but with their actions, whether it's, you know, not trading Tyreek, keeping Mike and Mark around, not trading any pieces that weren't necessarily, it's very clear that the front office plans to run it back one more time with the top five draft pick and then try to get back to the playoffs next season. Do you think the team, with the addition of, with bringing Mike Conley back, with the addition of a couple of more draft picks and some more seasoning from the young guys, do you think that this team can get back to the playoffs, or do you think this is the beginning of the end of this Grizzlies team as we know it, and that they're going to have to, at some point next year, things are probably not going to go, once again, they're going to kind of go off the rails, and they're going to be looking to trade pieces next year, or do you think they can get back to the playoffs in a single offseason?
So I think that, and this was one thing that a lot of the players actually talked about at the media day. I was surprised that so many, because I had heard, like you said, the front office bring this up as their modus operandi. Okay, we're going to be bad this year, but we're going to get everybody back next year, and we're going to add a draft pick, and we're going to be a competitive team. Chris Wallace said that basically verbatim today. But I was surprised by how many players brought that up. And, you know, I couldn't tell if that was just them, you know, parroting party line and just, you know, walking in step with the leader. But to me, it seemed like it was coming from like a genuine place. And maybe this is me being a green reporter at these kind of events and not knowing exactly the tone of speech. But what it came down to was Jermichael Green was asked that question basically, or was asked, what do you guys need in the offseason to get better? And I think the person who asked the question was thinking of an answer like, oh, we need a DeAndre Ayton type person, or a Luka Doncic, or maybe we could re-sign Tyreek Evans. Or I think that's what the kind of question he was looking for. And Jermichael zagged where this reporter was hoping for a zig and said, look, if we're just healthy, I think we will be a playoff team next year. And I'm paraphrasing a bit, but that is essentially what he was saying. If we get Mike Conley back, Marc Gasol is still going to have a great year if he's healthy. Chandler Parsons is going to come back. He's not going to have had surgery. He's going to be able to build himself up over the summer. And we're going to be able to add that pick plus whoever else we're able to sign with the mid-level exception. And he seemed really excited about the idea of competing next year. Whether that is feasible or not, I'm not totally certain. I mean, it totally makes sense, right? Like, I don't think it's out of the question to think that they can make the playoffs next year if they have everybody back and healthy. It's just, at this point, do you expect Chandler Parsons to give you, 35 games healthy? Do you think Mike Conley is going to be able to stay injury-free for another season at age 33, I think? Those are the questions that I think are the most intriguing. So I think I've danced all around your question, Brandon, without answering it, mostly because I don't exactly know the answer.
Yeah, I think it's kind of hard to know. I think Mike Conley cannot be underappreciated for this team, what he brings to this team in terms of not only leadership, but just ball handling, shot creation, shot making, just playmaking, moving on
and
playing
leadership
with and without the ball. Leadership, exactly. Like he was the one who stepped up when Fizdale asked for his team to show more leadership. I mean, Mark was never built that way. Mark's not built that way. He was never going to take it on. But Mike sort of actually grew more into that role that Fizdale wanted from his veterans. So I think adding Mike is sort of – I know it's just one player, and a lot of the guys that they have on the roster are bad. But I think Mike's probably – you get more out of him than necessarily just his skill set. So there's some intangibles there. Joe, kind of what are your thoughts? Do you think – I mean, you tend to be pretty positive. You think this team's fighting for a playoff spot next year, or are we having the same conversation about rebuilding this time next season?
They need a lot to go right, and that's kind of where they've been the past couple of years, and especially this past year, it didn't go right. So I'm leaning towards they'll be better because it's hard to be worse, but at the same time, I don't see them making a leap that drastic. Now, it obviously comes down to how they use the mid-level exception. You know, there's an outside chance, apparently, and Mac, maybe you can elaborate on this. And you did clarify that he said it would take a whale of an offer. I mean, if the Grizzlies somehow are able to win the lottery, get the number one overall pick, and trade that for Kawhi Leonard, I think they can compete. You know what I mean? If they can find a way to get that kind of a deal done. But that's extremely unlikely. You don't really see that. So I think the most likely scenario is they take somebody first, second, third overall, whatever it is, even up to five, and they find a way to use the mid-level exception in an efficient way because that's what history tells us. You know, that's my day job. I'm a history teacher. I study it. And the history of the Grizzlies and the history of Chris Wallace says that they're going to do things that don't make a ton of sense. If they do execute a trade, usually they're okay on trades, not always winners, but rarely do they flat out lose. So maybe they pull off a trade to try to get rid of Ben McLemore's contract. I think it's going to be a lot of little things. If anything, I don't see a major move, and I don't see this roster, even with Mike Conley coming back, maybe they're in the mix for like the 7 or 8 seed if it's jumbled again like it was this year. But I don't see them being players. I just don't. And maybe that's the grind of a long season kind of wearing me down. Ask me in September and October, and maybe I'll be a little bit more excited about it, Brandon. But I'm kind of looking at this roster thinking, okay, if Mike Conley, Dylan Brooks, Luka Doncic, you know, Jamichael Green, and Marc Gasol are your starters, looking at the rest of the Western Conference, Denver's going to be another year more experienced. The Timberwolves are still going to be together and strong. You've got Portland, who's really come along, the Utah Jazz. There's so many teams that if you're going to make an argument that the Grizzlies are going to be better, I think you have to make a similar argument that all those teams that are already in the playoffs are going to be better. Then you have, you know, the Los Angeles Clippers kind of floating out there who would probably be in that mix. The Lakers might get Paul George or LeBron James or both, depending on how their offseason goes. There's just so much that has to go right for them to be back in that mix that I see it as improbable at this point, but I've been wrong before. And like you said, usually I'm a positive guy and I'm wrong. So maybe if I'm negative and I'm wrong, it'll work out the way I really want it to.
That's the way to do it.
It might be, but I tell you what, this has been a crazy season, and it's one that we really kind of have to reflect on more next week, of course, on the show and obviously throughout the coming week at GrizzlyBearBlues.com, like I mentioned in the previous podcast with Holly, now that this is a twofer week, We talked about how we're starting our player reviews next week. We'll have a couple of roundtables, Grizzly season awards, NBA season awards, all that fun stuff. So continue to make GrizzlyBearBlues.com a major part of your Grizzlies experience heading into the offseason. A guy who's going to be a major part of the Grizzlies experience probably for a long time to come is Dylan Brooks. And that leads us to our last question here for Mac, senior writer at GrizzlyBearBlues.com. The GUB Live question of the day this week was, who is your MVP of the Memphis Grizzlies for the 2017-2018 season? Before we spoiler alert and give our picks for the award, here were the options. Marc Gasol, who had, like I said, I think one of his best seasons as a Grizzly, up there with the Defensive Player of the Year award, up there with his start in the All-Star game because of what he did as a leader for this organization and kind of picking up his leadership quality. I thought he had a heck of a year. Tyreek Evans, of course, before all the weirdness of the trade deadline that came and went, and he was still here, only played, I think it was, 5 or 6 games after the trade deadline, not with the team for a long time. Chris Wallace seems to think they have a shot to get him back, but I'd be shocked if he was back. There's no denying Tyreek Evans had a career year, or at worst, his best season since his rookie campaign. So Tyreek Evans was an option. Dylan Brooks, who is the only player to have played in all 82 games for the Grizzlies and play well. You could argue the steal of the draft was Dylan Brooks. So maybe the Grizzlies just need to trade for like 8 second round picks with whatever first round pick they get.
And they have the 32nd pick in this draft,
Which is going to be valuable. And we'll talk about that as the offseason goes on, I'm sure. And then finally, other, and reply with your vote. I got shockingly a high amount of votes for Ben McLemore, who of course was the tank commander and helped lead the tanking charge. Mike Conley got a couple of nods, folks like that. But the runaway winner was Dylan Brooks at almost 50% out of 192 votes. Thanks to everybody who participated in the poll this week. So I'll start with you, Mac. Who is your MVP of the Memphis Grizzlies this season?
So I think that the vote for Dylan Brooks is a little bit of recency bias. Nothing against Dylan. I mean, he had an unbelievable season, especially for a rookie, and I'm not trying to take anything away from that. But he did just score a career-high 36 points. I think a lot of people are looking at that and looking also at the fact that Mark didn't play a lot at the end of the season. Tyreek didn't play a lot at the end of the season. And these two guys were clearly your best players on the team. And so not being able to see those guys in action at the end, and on top of that, Dylan having that monstrous performance, I think that kind of skewed the vote. If I can just like get on my political science for like soapbox for 2 seconds. I think that there's a case to be made for Mike Conley, which doesn't make sense, obviously, because he only played in 12 games. But the fact that he was missing and they ended up, dropping 20 or 25 games from where they were last season, I think speaks volumes to how important he is to this team. And Brandon was talking about all the intangibles that Mike Conley has and provides for this team. But if I was going to vote based on the guys that you gave me, which were Marc Gasol, Dylan Brooks, and Tyreek Evans, I'd have to go with Tyreek, who had the best season, I think, of those three, despite not playing at the end of the season, was the only guy, really, on this team who was even sniffing an all-star nod. I would say he was conversationally all-star, but on top of that, like the fact that he was able to substitute. I mean, where would this team be without Tyreek Evans? Because obviously, like I said, Mike Conley not being in was hugely disappointing for the Grizzlies. But if you don't have Tyreek, then you're going to be playing Kobe Simmons and Andrew Harrison, or maybe you don't cut Wade Baldwin and you have him playing. I mean, you're talking about even less wins than the team has now. So, all of those reasons, I would have chosen Tyreek, but I'd love to hear why you guys agree or disagree with that decision.
Before we get there, what do you think, Brandon? Who's your MVP?
I mean, I voted for Brooks just because the fact that he was kind of – I mean, Tyreek was the lone bright spot for a little while, especially after Mike went down and you thought, you know, he's going to be a great asset because we can trade him for something. And then – he got sent home, didn't get traded, and then came back.
That wasn't
and then
his fault.
Got sent. That absolutely wasn't. It wasn't his fault. But then he came back, and then he got sent home again. And so after a certain point, he didn't see the court very often. I think he probably would have been my MVP vote if they'd been able to flip him for something. And I think he had a great year, and you hope that he'll come back and do that again. I'm doubtful that that happens. But, you know, you never know. I think Brooks was the light in the darkness, basically. And so he's the MVP in the sense that he actually gave Grizzlies fans something positive to root for, particularly, like, once the season had gone down the drain. He was kind of the one, like, bright spot in this season. And so I think I voted for him more of the fact that he looks like he was taken 45th overall. I mean, that's finding a diamond in the rough, and the Grizzlies have not done a great job of finding diamonds anywhere. So the fact that they were able to find something, I think you can make an argument for Mike Conley just because of where they were before he went down with the injury and where they were after. But I voted for Brooks just based on the fact that he was the lone bright spot in a very, very dark season. Joe, what were your thoughts on it?
And I think that it's important to kind of keep the concept together as well that we're arguing for a MVP for a 22-60 team. So anybody who reads our roundtable in the coming days or listens to this show and wants to tweet at us and say nobody because they were terrible, I think there's ground to stand on for that as well. I'm going to go with Marc Gasol, and I think you both just made good arguments for the other two. That's why I went with the options I did. I think you could argue for Dylan Brooks. Availability is sometimes the best ability, excuse me, and he had that in spades for Memphis this year. I think you can argue for Marc Gasol, as I did, in terms of maybe not his best statistical year, but he was that steadying force. He was that rock. He was essentially asked to be those things once everything kind of went to hell in a handbasket. Obviously, he didn't help the David Fizdale situation by any stretch of the imagination, but I think he learned from it. And I think that I saw real growth in him, at least from afar. And like I said, I've been pretty hard on Mark in the past. So it looked good to me. And then Tyreke Evans, arguably the best of all three in terms of actual play. So I think there's sound arguments to be had on all fronts, but it's really kind of important to keep in mind they were just really bad this year. And I think you can argue that nobody had that elite of a year for whatever reason, because they weren't able to consistently do it or they had other issues. There was lots going on there. I will get you out of here on this, Mac. You tweeted out about the likelihood or Chris Wallace talking about that trade, the issue with Tyreke Evans. I'm going to put you on the spot here a little bit. Between the way that he said he doesn't regret trading Tyreke Evans, even if he doesn't come back, which I don't think Tyreke Evans is coming back. Do you think now that the ownership issues have been resolved, Robert Parra is soundly back in the seat of the Memphis Grizzlies, and we'll talk more about that on next week's show. Do you see Chris Wallace resuming his duties, on opening night, is Chris Wallace the general manager of the Memphis Grizzlies? I'm going to put you on the spot. Yes or no, according to your vibes that you kind of get being around the team and just following this season, the way he answered those questions. Because to me, it felt like a guy who was almost, I don't want to say resigned, but he was almost defiant in the face of logic when it comes to Tyreke Evans and that whole situation. Is Chris Wallace going to be the general manager in October?
Well, I mean, you talk about putting me on the spot. I mean, that's a really tough question. I've only ever been around Wallace one time, and that was today. So I don't want to, like, seem like I'm, like, on the beating pulse of where he is with his job. I will say that he was asked today if he thinks he's going to be around any longer, and he says he doesn't think there's going to be any changes. He doesn't think that there's going to be – he doesn't anticipate any changes in the front office. Again, I think it's hard to tell if that's like just him being the front man and saying all the right things or not. Because honestly, the way he answered the questions today, I know to you it came off as defiant because I tweeted out all the most newsworthy things that he said, especially that really bad quote about Tyreke. But the rest of the things he said, like, he was a pretty, like, normal, he seemed pretty laid back, like, he didn't act like he was under any pressure or anything. Like I said at the beginning of this chat that we're having, you know, he seemed a little bit relieved that it was over. And was just kind of talking off the cuff to reporters and, you know, just kind of shooting the breeze. Like, it didn't seem like it was a big deal to him. And he answered every question to me, it seemed like, pretty openly, and without any, fear. So from that standpoint, it makes me feel like, okay, he might really be like pretty entrenched in his job. But on the other hand, you know, he is wearing a nice suit. He kind of has the slick back hair. Like, I can't tell if he's just playing us or if he really is true. So, I mean, I hate to do this to you, but like, I can't really tell. The Tyreek quote was really bad though. Like, there's no way, because I agree with you, Joe. There's no way Tyreek is coming back. There was no way he was coming back when they didn't trade him at the deadline. And I think there's even less of a chance now that the season is over. And the fact that he is going to go down with this and just keep doubling down on it, it makes no sense to me. I guess there's a point to be said that, I mean, he was kind of in a position where he'd be damned if he did and damned if he didn't. But even now, like, I mean, you can admit that it was a mistake. And I think everyone would be mad at you for like a few hours and then be like, all right, cool, he copped to it.
And I think that's the biggest thing, you know, for me. Just admit that you messed up. You know, I mean, I make mistakes in my job every day. Everybody does. Nobody's perfect. And he is on a pedestal where, at least locally in Memphis and to a regional extent, his mistakes are amplified times 1 million. You know what I'm saying? So
yeah.
I get that he would maybe be defensive of himself. I understand he would argue maybe for it, say this was the logic, and I could disagree with that logic, but if he owned up to it. Right, exactly. If he came out and said, here's what we thought we were doing, it didn't work out, I messed up, you could hire the greatest general manager in the history of sports. You could hire the greatest coach in the history of sports. They all mess up. They all screw up. Just own it. You know, that's kind of my thing. Not passing the buck, not being defiant. It's a strange hill to die on. It'll be interesting to see how it works out for him moving forward. I think he will be here. That doesn't necessarily mean he's going to have the same level of power. We have no idea what goes on in the inner workings of that front office. We have very little idea who's actually pulling the strings. That could very well become more convoluted. Maybe Chris Wallace is a public figurehead and somebody else is pulling the strings behind the scenes. Para being in Memphis, I do think, stabilizes the Grizzlies in that city for a little while longer at least. But I think it will not do anything to kind of resolve all the questions about who's actually calling the shots. So it's going to be a fun offseason, boys. I'm looking forward to it. Mac, thank you so much for your work down the stretch at grizzlybearblues.com and always for us over on the blog. You do a great job, and I look forward to continuing to read your stuff heading through the offseason. Thank you, Mac. Have a good one.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, and I really enjoyed covering the team, so thanks for giving me the opportunity.
You're welcome, Mac. You're welcome. All right, there he goes. Mac Trammell, senior writer for us over at grizzlybearblues.com. Make sure you're giving him a follow. Make sure you give him a follow on Twitter, at Mac underscore Trammell, TRAMMELL. This whole thing's coming off the rails, and I'm blaming the Unk.
It's finishing up here on Grizzly.
Yeah, it's the Illuminati's fault, not Unk, because the Unk is the man. I agree with that. It's the Illuminati, not Unk. We're finishing up here on the second segment of Grizzly Bear Blues Live this week. Crazy show because of the technical difficulties. Brandon, we'll get you out of here on this. And I think it can maybe even be a little bit open-ended heading into the show next week. What do you see as Chris Wallace's future in Memphis, given what Mac just said? Because Mac's right. He was actually there. He heard the whole context of the comments of Chris Wallace. Maybe it's not quite as bad as we think it is, or at least the way that the sound bites and the tweets read and sound. But do you think Chris Wallace stays in the same role? Do you think he's gone? The news of Robert Parra, like I said, we'll talk more in depth about that next week. The news of Parra sticking around as the controlling owner, does any of that mean anything different for Wallace in the front office, or do you think it's going to be business as usual?
I think there's going to be some real reevaluation. I think I think the optics of the Tyreek situation, how it's played out, how they tried to, you know, save their own skins when it happened. They tried to spin it with their PR department. They had Hollinger come out and say, and basically blatantly kind of just basically lie to the fans. He said, you know, we're not going to be willing to do what the other tanking teams are doing, and then all of the steps that they did after that. I think the optics of that and how it's been perceived around the league and within the community, I think there's going to be a lot of pressure to re-sign Tyreek Evans. I don't think it happens. And I think because of that and the way that the whole situation was handled, I think there's a decent chance that he's gone. I haven't really gotten that impression before. It's always seems like he's had pretty good job security, but I think maybe with this ownership change, or not change, but the situation's resolved now, that cloud's kind of been wiped away. So maybe there's some, maybe Pera's a little bit more willing to reevaluate job performance, and maybe there's a chance that Wallace is gone. I think this is the first time I felt like that, and I think there's a good chance this year. How are you feeling about it? Do you think he's here next season or not?
I think he's here. I think he'll be here. I have no idea if he'll be, like I said, a figurehead, or if he'll have some sort of role in a similar fashion. Who's really going to make these picks? Who's going to really call the shots? I think he's going to be here. I think that's the easiest way to go. I think J.B. Bickerstaff's going to be here. I think, obviously, Pera's sticking around, and that's what is going to happen. Now, Brandon Abraham did a great job, wrote an article over on the blog about various coaching candidates that should be considered, and I mentioned Becky Hammond a while back, and there will be names that will probably be floated. I bet they interview some folks. But the most likely scenario is J.B. Bickerstaff keeping the job, as Mac wrote about over at the site. The players like him. You know, the players aren't going to go out of their way to just suck up to a guy that they don't think is going to be around. So and maybe it was genuine. I think in a lot of their cases it was. Again, they're multimillionaires. They're done with the season. There's no incentive for them to openly go out and endorse a guy, but multiples of them did that today. So I think that J.B. Bickerstaff will be back. I think Chris Wallace will be back. Whether or not he's truly calling the shots and making the picks, making the trade calls, you know, I think that's up for debate, and we may never know the answer to that. But I think you're going to see a lot of the same in terms of organizational stability heading into next year, and that's probably for the best after such a tumultuous season. The next time we'll be on the Blog Talk Radio airwaves is April 19th, hopefully without technical difficulties. It'll be our last show for a couple of weeks. We'll come back May 10th. Will be our next pod after the 19th. We look forward to our guests that we'll have on that show. We look forward to chatting with you. We'll open up the phone lines once more, heading into a brief two-week hiatus. And we will definitely talk NBA playoffs. We'll talk our end-of-season awards. Probably a longer episode next week. Looking forward to that. Thanks so much to Holly Whitfield and the First Podcast for joining us this week, talking about our announcement of a May 15th and a June 21st for the lottery draw, and then, of course, the draft itself. Party, GBB, and I Love Memphis partnering once again. Excited to be doing that. Thanks to Mac for all the great work he's done. Thanks to Brandon Connor, of course, for everything he's done as my co-host this season and working with me over at GBB. And thanks to every single contributor over at grizzlybearblues.com. I'm going to give more elaborate shout-outs on social media here in a little bit. But I do want to say on the podcast that it has been a pleasure and continues to be a pleasure working with everybody who is a contributor, writer, senior writer, whatever it might be, over at grizzlybearblues.com. I am fortunate to be the site manager in that community, finishing up my second season, looking forward to my third. It really is a blast. It's more than I ever could have hoped or dreamed for in a hobby, as stupid as that sounds. But it's true. It's something that I started doing years ago now because I was opinionated and I liked the Grizzlies and I wanted to talk about basketball, and it's morphed into this, and it's really cool. So thanks to Seth Pollock, my boss. Thanks to everybody at SB Nation. Been a pretty awesome opportunity for me, and it's also only going to get better as our site continues to grow. SB Nation developing us, investing in GBB, and we're going to get to do a lot of fun stuff this summer and beyond. So thanks to them. Thanks to Brandon, like I said, and all the other editors over at GBB, all the contributors. And of course, as always, thanks to you, our amazing, amazing audience, for making us a part of your Memphis Grizzlies fan experience. So for Mac, for Holly, for Brandon, I'm Joe. We will talk to you guys next week. Until then, grind forth, Grizz Nation. This is Grizzly Bear Blues Live.